those who tuned to yesterday, delivering shows from radio's past. Mark Levenier, your host for an hour of continuing stories. Later on, it's One Man's Family, and yours truly, Johnny Deller. But right now, part 3 of 10 of the Adventures by Morse story, The Cobra King Strikes Back, broadcast on May 5th, 1946.
Adventures by Morse. Carlton E. Morse presents The Cobra King Strikes Back, featuring Captain Friday.
If you like high adventure, come with me. If you like the stealth of intrigue, come with me. If you like blood and thunder, come with me.
Several weeks ago, two groups of Americans boarded a trans-Pacific liner for Cochin China. One party was headed by Dr. Howard Carter, archaeologist, and included his daughter Celia, Professor Ernest LeBrun, medical advisor, Terry Mills, his young assistant, and Tuck Kwan, Cambodian scholar and graduate of the University of California. Dr. Carter's party is on its way into the northern jungles of French Indochina in search of a lost sister city of the famous Angkor Thom. The second party is headed by Captain Bart Friday.
Yes, and also in my party is Skip Turner and my secretary, Patricia Young, and a young Cambodian prisoner, Fen Lo. It was my job to return this Fen Lo from Hawaii to the authorities here at Saigon, charged with murder and plotting against the French Indochina government. But we lost him aboard the ship. He escaped and vanished. I still believe that Taquan of Dr. Carter's party assisted his fellow Cambodian in his Houdini trick. But I have no proof.
Yes. Well, when the ship docked at Saigon, Captain Friday suddenly decided to join the Carter expedition into the jungles. Taquan warned him he must not, that it would be dangerous for himself, for Skip Turner, and especially for his secretary, Patricia. Then Dr. Carter disappeared out of Saigon, just whisked away, leaving a note telling Professor LeBrun and Captain Friday to organize the expedition and bring it north, and he would join the party at the ancient jungle city of Angkor Thom. The night before the expedition is to leave, the two girls, Celia and Patricia, were spending the night together. Out of the darkness and through their open window came first the ringing of bells in the city, then the sound of a chanting voice, and then the hissing of a snake as a giant cobra was tossed into the room. The snake is standing on its tail, swaying rhythmically to the weird chanting coming from the street outside the window. Then suddenly, a wicked animal-like face appears at the window.
The face at the window is climbing in. He's coming in.
I'm going to try to reach the door.
No, you mustn't. Don't get off the bed. The cobra's on the floor.
Oh, we can't just lie here. Is he still at the window?
He's sitting on a windowsill. A little squat man.
Go away. Go away, do you hear?
Wait, I've got a gun under my pillow.
Do you dare shoot him?
Wait and see.
Go away or I'll shoot. Get out of here.
He doesn't move.
I'll count three and then look out.
He's moving. He's coming into the room.
Oh, there. Did you see that? Did you see him get out of the window?
Deformed. A little deformed man. Did you hit him?
No. I fired over his head.
What did he want? Why pick out our window to climb in?
I don't know. Anyway, that shout out aroused somebody in the hotel.
I'm going to get out of here.
Don't you dare put a foot out of this bed while that cobra's in here. He's deadly poison.
Patricia, what's that shooting?
Hey, boss, there's a cobra loose in our room.
Cobra? Are you certain?
Yes, Captain Friday. We saw it in the moonlight. Someone put it in through the window.
Is the door locked?
Yes.
The key in the lock?
No.
Good. Skip Turner's with me. He'll have it open in a jiffy. Get to work, Skip. All the rest of you people stand back. Did you hear them say there was a cobra loose in there?
Watch out when you open the door. He's a big one and he's angry.
You two girls don't move from your bed. Skip's got the door open.
Shall I try to shoot it if I see it again?
Put your gun up. You might shoot one of us. We'll take care of the snake.
All right.
I'll throw open the door now. Skip, be ready with your club. I'll use my pistol.
All set.
Good. Turn on the lights. Right there by the door. Good.
There he is, there in the corner.
The lights blinded him.
Hey, good shot, Chief. Right through the neck.
Shut the door, Skip. Keep that crowd out of here.
Oh, gee, boss, some excitement.
Are you girls all right?
Oh, now that I'm over my scare. But talk about your nerve. I'll have to hand it to Patricia.
I'm so scared I can't keep my teeth from chattering.
Hey, what did you shoot at, Patricia? Was it just to rouse us?
No, there was somebody in the window.
Man?
A little deformed man.
Did you hit him?
No, I shot through the window over his head.
Oh, I shouldn't have done that. You should have let him have it.
I couldn't shoot a man.
Well, he had it coming. Besides, you'll get a reputation for being a bad shot.
I just couldn't do it.
Hey, Chief, what about this snake?
Bring him over here, Skip. Let's see what he looks like.
Oh, I never saw a deader snake. He practically shot his head off. Hey, looky here. There's a paper tied to his tail.
A message?
Well, something like that. Here, take a look.
Written in French.
Yeah? Well, that don't do us no good.
Here, may I see it? Oh, Captain Friday, it's a warning.
What does it say?
Well, as near as I can translate, it says that this snake is an envoy from the great Cobra King, and that he brings a warning that it'll be fatal for Captain Friday, his secretary, or Skip Turner to enter the realm of the Cobra King.
Fatal, huh? Fatal for this Cobra King guy, maybe. Hey, who is he, anyhow?
There's no such person, Skip. He's the mythological founder of the Khmer civilization. The people who built Angkor and the other cities lost in the jungle to the north.
Well, there was no mythological king that sent that note on the tail of a cobra.
Yeah, that's true. Patricia, I think I'll ship you back to the United States tomorrow. There's a ship leaving for Singapore and Hong Kong early in the afternoon.
Oh, boss, you can't.
Skip and I have got to go through with this mission. We've got to go north with the Carter expedition. But I can't endanger your life. This one night's experience should be enough.
I can go any place that Celia can. I won't be sent home.
But Celia isn't in danger. Her father's party seems to be wanted in the interior. I'm horning in on this at the French government's request. Somebody doesn't want me and Skip. I'll be on the spot all the time. That's the only reason you can't go.
I'm not going back to San Francisco without you and Skip, boss. That's final.
We got a secretary as stubborn as she is cute, looks like, Chief.
Think it over.
I've done my thinking. If it's good enough for my boss, it's good enough for me.
Well, we'll take you as far as Angkor Thom. We make that part of the trip by automobile. That ought to be safe enough.
When do we leave?
We get out of here as fast as Professor LeBrun and I can get things organized.
Well, after this experience, I'm not as fond of Saigon as I was.
We'll be on our way before dawn.
The trip by car from Saigon to Angkor Thom took from 3 o'clock in the morning until mid-afternoon, through groves filled with wild monkeys, and then up into higher country, where the brilliant feathered parrots and parakeets and other tropical winged creatures fill the eye with color and the ears with horrible screeches and squawks. And then the car swooped down into the low country, the swampland, hot, humid, fetid, where the water was scummed over and stank of dead things. The only living thing heard on this part of the trip was, yes, one single mockingbird. And then slowly the road swept upward. It was still hot, but there was the coolness of altitude in the air as the car came up the tangled jungle plateau. And at 3 in the afternoon, they came to Angkor Wat, the great temple about which the ancient city was built. They went to the only hotel in the place. Dr. Carter had not yet arrived.
But Professor LeBrun, Father said we were to meet him here at Angkor Thom, and he isn't here. He just disappeared.
Oh, don't worry about him, Celia. Dr. Carter has been taking care of himself for a long time now.
This is such a desperate, secretive country. It gives me the shivers just to stand out here in the open this way.
Shivers in this kind of weather. Look at the heat waves quivering about the pinnacles of old Angkor Wat.
Angkor Wat? The most awe-inspiring temple I've ever seen. It reminds me of a haunted palace.
Exactly what it is. A haunted temple, centuries upon centuries old.
It's sinister. But, Professor, is there only one hotel here in Angkor Thom? Isn't there any place else Dad might be?
No, Celia. Only the one little bungalow hotel. Everyone visiting Angkor Wat stays here.
Then we can't do a thing.
Nothing but wait. Undoubtedly, we'll hear from him when he's ready for us to join him.
And what's become of Taquan? He's supposed to be our guide. And yet he left us the minute we arrived, vanished as completely as Dad.
You are a prized little trouble finder, aren't you, Celia?
Well, it's so different than I thought it would be. I thought we'd all camp together and be good friends. But Dad disappears, Taquan's deserted us.
Yes, yes. And here we are scattered all over the map of Cambodia.
And worse than that, everything is wrapped up in mystery and warnings and threats and danger signs.
Ah, here's young Perry Mills now. Hello, Perry. At least our assistant archaeologist is still with us.
Hmm? He's as worried as I am. Did you find out anything, Perry?
Oh, Celia. Professor LeBrun, I've made inquiries at the hotel and from everybody I could get hold of. And as far as I can find out, Dr. Carter has never arrived here.
Oh, is that so, Mills?
Oh, look here, Professor LeBrun. Why be so doggone supercilious? If Dr. Carter's in danger, I want to know it. We'll go back to Saigon as fast as we can and demand a government search for him.
And tell me, how would you get back to Saigon, even if you wanted to go? The motor cars that brought us are probably halfway back there by now.
I'd forgotten that. But look, we can't just stand around.
Oh, be reasonable, Perry. Dr. Carter said he would meet us here in Angkor. He didn't say he'd be here the moment we arrived. Ah, look. The sun is just going down behind the temple.
Massive thing, isn't it? Reminds me of the pyramids. Has that same mountain-like grandeur.
I've never seen the pyramids, but its general artistic ensemble is much more striking than even the Taj Mahal.
Look, there goes the sun. See, the temple's turned from gold to marble color. Oh, lovely. Oh, look at that great cloud of birds.
What a wonderful sight. Just as the sun sank, that great flock of white birds rose out of the forest.
Well, the most vivid thing I've ever had the pleasure of seeing.
Oh, Captain Friday.
I was just talking with a French engineer at the hotel. He tells me that in spite of the fact that they had to actually chop this temple out of the wilderness, there's not the slightest sign of decay.
Incredible.
He says the carvings on the galleries are as perfect as the days they were made.
I can believe it. I can almost hear the ancient priests chanting in the galleries.
And the dancing girls. There were dancing girls, of course.
Hundreds of them. Girls with little silver bells and sparkling tiaras. Canopies of jasper, floors of silver. Beautiful priestesses with strings of rubies about their white throats.
Oh, listen. Why doesn't someone say something? Makes the cold chills run up and down my back just standing here.
It affects us all the same way, Celia. It's the past casting its spell.
Cambodians are afraid of that feeling. They think it's the spell of the Cobra King. They think it's a warning for them to keep out of this part of Cambodia. They link it with the force that originally drove the Khmers out of Angkor and the other great lost cities.
Honestly, did the Khmers just drop everything and leave their cities?
They left everything, Celia. But not until they'd buried all their precious jewels and sacred ornaments.
And is the sacred seven-headed cobra of emerald buried in one of these cities?
Celia, not so loud.
Hiya. Hi, Chief.
Ah, Skip Dawson. Hey, Dawson.
Hey, Patricia's with him. I wonder if they found anything.
Oh, undoubtedly Skipper's 3D clue.
Hi, boss. We discovered something.
What did I tell you?
Boss, Skip and I ran onto the queerest old Englishman you ever saw. Lives down there on the edge of the woods all by himself.
An hermit, eh?
Well, I didn't ask him. But he had a long white beard and watery eyes and long skinny hands.
Yes, you've noticed that an hermit, all right.
So he's a hermit.
Well, what about him?
Got a bunch of information out of him.
Information about what?
Dr. Carter.
About Dad?
Really?
Hey, just a minute. What did you find out, Skip? Has Dr. Carter been here?
Sure. Great caravan came through last night. Went through like a train of cars.
They left us behind. Father must be a prisoner.
Dr. Carter vanished from Saigon, but promised to meet the rest of his party at the ancient city of Angkor Thom, outpost of civilization on the edge of the Cochin China jungles. He wasn't there when his daughter and the others arrived. And now Skip Turner and Patricia have uncovered news of him.
Sure, I asked the hermit if he'd seen an expedition pass this way, toward the north, with a white man in it, and he seemed to know all about it.
The funniest expression came into his eyes. He said it was a great caravan and that it went by last night.
Only last night, huh? He didn't beat us here by very much.
What else did he say, Patricia?
Oh, Celia, he said it was like a parade of giant skeletons.
Oh, come now, after all.
Well, that's what he said. He said there were ghostly beings moving in and out among the shadows of the forest, and that there were great wild elephants in the caravan, and tall camels and wild ponies ridden by Khmer slaves, and there were parakeets in bamboo cages, and...
Patricia, do you know what you're talking about?
But, boss, I'm just telling you what he told me.
That's right, Captain, that's what he said. Of course, he was laying it on a little thick. It was probably just an ordinary caravan going north.
But no caravans go north from Angkor Thom. Angkor's on the edge of civilization. There's only wilderness to the north.
Well, he saw something, all right.
Are you certain he saw Dr. Carter in this caravan?
Well, he said the leader was a strange white man. I don't suppose there's very many strange white men in this neck of the woods.
Something screwy about all this.
Well, you can come down and talk with him yourself. His hut is down there under that big banyan tree.
Don't you think we should all go back to the hotel? It's getting dark and...
You're getting scared.
Well, I don't care. I don't like those long, creepy shadows. Oh, look. What's that?
Hey,
well,
that's him. That's the bird who told us.
But he's got on a yellow robe now.
That's a Buddhist priest costume.
And he's wearing a crown covered with orchids.
Yeah, jungle's full of wild orchids.
And if I'm not mistaken, he's got a scepter, too. Or is it only a bamboo rod?
Well, let's go to the hotel.
Who do you suppose he is?
The Mad King of Angkor.
No.
What's all this nonsense, Labyrinth?
Oh, don't look at me, Captain. It's none of my doing.
Just the same, you seem to know what it's all about.
Quite right.
Then perhaps you'll explain.
I should be delighted. That strange creature you see there is an Englishman, right enough. He lost his mind in the Great War, and he came out here to Cambodia as a result of some fanatical twist of the mentality.
Insane.
The French here cater to his illusions, and the natives submit to his presence out of fear that he may have some mystical claim to the throne of Angkor.
Madman.
I got my information from the French engineer. He wanders about the temples, offering up prayers to these mythical gods. And he sleeps in the shrines or wherever weariness overtakes him.
How perfectly dreadful.
The women of the native villages feed him. They say he accepts all these donations with the dignity of a monarch.
It's getting too dark to see much. Let's go back to the hotel and figure what to do next.
Yeah, and get some fodder. I'm hungry. Mighty good meals you get out here on the edge of nowhere, Chief.
A cigarette, Skip?
Mm-hmm.
Let's sit here on the steps of the hotel for a bit. Tell me that later this evening, the natives are going to hold a torch dance on the elephant terrace at the front of the temple. Might be interesting.
Yeah? You don't say. Some of these Hindu girls, snake dancers?
No, afraid not, Skip. They tell me in the hotel that the native girls of Cambodia aren't much at dancing. And by the way, I hope Patricia and Celia haven't left the hotel.
No, I went to their room.
That's good. You seen LeBrun or young Mills since dinner?
Yeah, they went off together over towards the temple. Said they wanted to get a close-up view of some of the carvings.
A queer time of night to be studying carvings on a temple wall.
Well, they had flashlights. Hey, the nights here are certainly blackouts, ain't they? You'd think we was on the bottom side of a tea kettle.
Hmm. Our Cambodian guide has certainly made himself scarce since we arrived here.
Takwan? I think I caught a glimpse of him just before we went in to dinner down in that grove of... what kind of trees did you call them things?
Banyans.
Oh, yeah, down in that grove of banyans.
What was he doing?
Well, nothing that I could see. Just caught a glimpse of him, and then he disappeared in the shadows.
Now, look here, Skip. What do you think about this business?
Not a blooming thing. It's all wild horse meat to me. You and I start to bring a prisoner to Saigon, and he gives us the slip aboard ship. Then we arrive in Saigon, and you suddenly decide to become an explorer and drag us off up here to Angkor with Dr. Carter's party.
Yes, but I explained the reason for that. The French government's afraid of an uprising among the Cambodian natives.
Why?
Because of the supposed finding of the ancient seven-headed emerald cobra.
Oh, shucks, Chief. Ain't nobody gonna get very excited over a statue of a snake.
You don't know the fanaticism of the East, Skip. There'll be plenty of excitement if the sacred cobra is found.
You mean one certain statue?
The one and only Emerald Cobra.
Now, what's that got to do with us, Captain Friday?
We're representing the French government. We're here to see that there's no such uprising. If necessary, to capture this seven-headed cobra and get it out of the country.
Yeah? Some job.
A dangerous job. You heard what Dr. Carter said.
You mean about the priest following you and sticking a knife in you no matter where you went?
Yes.
That's a lot of hooey.
It's a very well-established fact.
Yeah?
It's been done before.
Well, then what did you take the job on for?
Skip, never before in my career have I let a prisoner escape. That Cambodian killer, Fen Lo, slipped through my fingers, and I don't like it.
Yeah? So that's what's eating you, huh?
I'm going to recapture that fellow, dead or alive, if I spend the rest of my life in Indochina.
Well, what makes you think you'll find him up here in this wilderness?
Two reasons. First, when Taquan brought us the message in Saigon that Dr. Carter had gone on ahead, he also said that I was right about Fen Lo not having committed suicide. Remember that?
Sure. Fen Lo's alive.
Well, that was a subtle challenge sent to me. It indicated that Takwan had been in touch with Fen Lo quite recently. It also meant that Fen Lo defied me to capture him. now that he was back on home territory.
Uh-huh, I begin to see.
And the fact that the excitement over the possible return of the Emerald Cobra comes just at the time of the return of Taquan and Fenlo from the United States leads me to believe that there's a very definite link between those two incidents.
Uh-huh.
So I figure that as long as I can keep within range of Taquan, I won't be very far from the center of excitement. Nor will I be far from the man I want, Fenlo.
Yeah, but what's going to prevent Taquan from beating it into the jungle and leaving us stranded here in Angkor?
That's exactly what he would do if it wasn't for the Carter party. He's got some sort of understanding with Dr. Carter and Professor Lebrun. He won't desert them. Probably he's sworn to protect them in case of an uprising. Lebrun and Carter were very good to him while he was in the United States, and people of the East are tremendously loyal to their friends.
And we're riding along as excess baggage on this friendship.
Yeah, that's right. It's a most uncomfortable position to be in, Skip. Taquan won't give us any protection if he can get out of it without breaking faith with Dr. Carter and Lebrun.
Yeah. Well, I don't think we ought to take Patricia back into the woods under them conditions.
Oh, bring her along, Captain.
Hey.
I'll vouch for her safety.
Hey, Lebrun, how long you been sticking your ears in on this confab?
Oh, goodness, Mr. Turner. What a tremendous reserve of bellicosity you must have. Always jumping out at people.
Yeah, well, I don't think much of guys with long ears.
Delightfully phrased.
Well, you get the drift, anyhow.
Oh, without a doubt.
Never mind, Skip. What was it you said, Professor Lebrun, about my secretary?
I said bring Patricia along on the expedition. She'll be as safe as any of us.
Yeah, but what about Captain Fryder here and me?
Oh, I say, Skip, you don't want me to set up a guard around you and the captain, do you?
I can take care of myself, don't you worry. That ain't the idea. What I want to know is this Taquan bird leading Captain Fryder and me into a trap?
Look here, I can arrange it so that both of you will be under the same protection as the rest of us.
How?
Well, forget about this business of the French government. Forget about the seven-headed Emerald Cobra. Forget you ever heard of anyone by the name of Fenlo. Come along on the expedition as a couple of guests of Dr. Carter. See the sights. Enjoy yourself. Make it a first-class vacation.
My reasons for being in this part of the country seem to have traveled ahead of me.
You had your warning in that Cobra incident in Saigon?
My answer is no. I'm here to get Fenlo. I don't leave without him.
You don't know what you are setting out to do, Captain Friday.
Are you trying to defend that murderer?
According to his lights, he is not a murderer. He was treated unjustly, and he struck to free himself from further injustice.
Justice is not a matter of individual idea, Lebrun. According to law, Fenlo, a prisoner, killed his captor, a French consul attaché. Therefore, Fenlo is a murderer.
He is a mighty intelligent young man, Captain Friday. He has a splendid mind. He's a natural-born leader.
You seem to know a great deal about him.
I've met him. I've seen him command men. I like him tremendously.
Well, he's still a murderer. He's a prisoner who escaped from my hands. He'll return to Saigon, my prisoner, or one of us will return in a casket.
I'm sorry, Captain. There is nothing I can do for you, then.
You're not leaving us behind, Lebrun. According to the instructions of Dr. Carter's note, I'm co-leader with you on this expedition now.
Oh, no. You go along all right.
There's nothing more you could do for us. Skip and I look out for ourselves, as long as you promise protection for Patricia.
Your secretary is in absolutely no danger.
And the matter's settled.
There's an old biblical quotation, Captain. It goes something like this. He who lives by the sword shall perish by the sword.
Yeah. Well, it's lucky swords have gone out of fashion then, ain't it?
If I didn't know you to be a pair of brave men, I'd think you the biggest lunatics out of asylums.
Hey, look yon across that patch of woods. What are all them lights?
The dancers. There's a religious ceremony down on the Elephant Terrace.
Oh, yeah, the chief mentioned it. What kind of lights have they got?
Torches of bamboo, bound in some kind of a leaf and dipped in perfumed oil.
Yeah? Any girls?
If you're thinking of the beautiful dancing girls of the ancient Khmer Empire, you've got a disillusionment ahead of you, Skip. Besides, the dancers tonight are youngsters of 12 or 13. Would you like to take a walk down and watch them?
Yeah. What do you say, Captain?
Oh, that's a good idea.
It isn't much of a walk. It's a quarter of a mile or so.
Looks further than that.
There is a path leading down through the Banyan Grove.
Safe to travel through the woods at night?
You have weapons, haven't you?
Of course. Now, let's go.
Here, I have a flashlight. We are quite safe. Down this way. Now, just keep on the path. No telling what sort of insect or crawling thing might be lurking in the grass.
Yeah, I hate crawling things.
Well, it's worth taking a chance to see these youngsters perform.
Hey, what sort of costumes do they wear?
Oh, look out, look out, look out. Watch your step. The pathway leads right straight ahead now. I think you'll find this very interesting.
Gosh, what a dark hole.
Oh, the trees overhanging the path.
Why don't you use the flashlight?
Careful. The path turns here.
LeBron. What's that?
Well, I'll be a son of a gun. Elephants.
Your hands in the air, if you please.
Uh-oh. Fellow with a gun, Chief.
Don't move. You are surrounded.
Elephants, camels, ponies. Hey, what is this, a circus?
Let's see. Wasn't it the mad king of Angkor who mentioned something about a caravan?
Look, I want an explanation.
Quiet, please. Bind these men and put them on the second elephant.
Well, spank me for a baby. Kidnapped aboard an elephant.
Taquang comes and goes like a gray phantom in a ghostly kingdom. And now Captain Friday, Professor LeBrun, and Skip Turner are the victims of the weirdest kidnapping plot ever conceived. But what's become of Perry Mills and Celia and Patricia? The fourth episode of The Cobra King Strikes Back will come to you next week and is entitled The Temple of the Gorillas. Watch for next week's colorful episode, Temple of Gorillas, brought to you in this newest series of Adventures by Morse.
Adventures by Morse, on Tuned to Yesterday, episode 3 of 10 of the story The Cobra King Strikes Back from May 5th, 1946. This is an hour of continuing stories on Tuned to Yesterday. I'm your host, Mark Levonier. Now time for One Man's Family. Following the storyline, The Book of Teddy, this was heard on NBC on September 27, 1950, Book 78, Chapter 19.
One Man's Family, brought to you every weekday night at this time, transcribed by Bactine, a remarkable new family antiseptic and germicide, another fine, dependable product of Miles Laboratories, makers of Alka-Seltzer. Overheard between Fanny, Henry, and Elwood in the library at the family home.
I know I wasn't expected till later, Mr. Barber, but I want to talk to Teddy. Something kind of important has come up.
Boy, we're glad to see you, Elwood.
Yes, Elwood. Stay and have potluck with us.
Well, I hate to barge in. Always seem to arrive everywhere a little ahead of time.
Mm-hmm. So that's how it is with the barbers today. Friends, once you try Bactine, we know you'll agree it's the handiest bottle in the house. Yes, Bactine, spelled B-A-C-T-I-N-E, the new family antiseptic made by the makers of Alka-Seltzer, is winning new laurels every day. You use it when the children cut or scratch themselves, when Dad nicks himself shaving. Get a 30 or 70 cent bottle from your druggist today. There is nothing exactly like Bactine. Chapter 19, Book 78. There's a smell of wood smoke in the air this evening here in Seacliff, San Francisco. It's almost dinner time now, and coming briskly along the street, headed for the Barber family home, is Elwood Giddings, Teddy Barber's fiancé, early again. He wasn't expected until after dinner, but there he is, ringing the front doorbell now, and Henry Barber leaves his cozy fire in the library to answer the door.
Elwood, well, good evening.
Hello, Mr. Barber.
Come in. Oh, still in the air, eh? Here, let me take your seat.
No, I'll keep my... I want to talk to Teddy for a moment. Is he home yet?
Just got in from the hospital. She's upstairs. Come along. Mrs. Barber's in the library. Fanny! Elwood's here.
Elwood?
Well, I know I wasn't expected till later, Mrs. Barber. I wanted to see Teddy for a moment. Something kind of important has come up. I'm sorry to intrude.
We're happy to see you anytime, Elwood, eh, Fanny?
Of course. Please sit down. Teddy said you were going to a movie this evening. Why don't you stay and take potluck with us?
Oh, no. I thought I'd go over to a drugstore, come back a little later. I just felt I had to see Teddy for a second as soon as I could.
I'll go and tell her you're here, Elwood.
Yes, ma'am. Well, I hate to have you climb all those stairs, Mrs. Barber. I'll be glad to run up.
No, I'll tell her.
Henry.
Yes, Henry?
Clifford's in his room. Let him run up to the third floor.
All right, Henry.
Gosh, I always seem to cause a lot of trouble.
Oh, not a bit. I'm glad to see you. Doesn't that wood fire smell good on a day like this, eh? Eucalyptus. Makes the fragrant blaze on a crisp fall day. Sit down. I'm glad you dropped by.
Well, thanks. Oh, this fine old room. Yeah, I told Teddy the other day, it's my ambition someday to have a home as warm and inviting as this one.
Sure.
Of course, I've been trying to convince Teddy that it won't be any time till we can modernize that house we bought.
Sure. Oh, you'll have great fun fixing it up once you get at it. I drew Teddy a sketch the other evening to show what could be done with a little garden and that old picket fence.
Was she interested?
Yeah, oh, yes, indeed.
I don't think she realizes quite... Oh, Mrs. Barber.
Teddy will be right down, Elwood. She had a very hard day at the hospital.
Oh, that's too bad.
She's almost too tired to go to the movies, I'm afraid. You stay and have dinner with us.
Oh, I don't like to impose again. I know you didn't plan
it. Oh, nonsense. Delighted. Yes, sir. Take a coat, sir.
No. I'll just put it here over a chair. I really didn't plan to stay. See, I came across an item in the afternoon paper. Did you know your family minister, Dr. MacArthur? Well, he's going to Cleveland next Sunday to attend an ecclesiastical convention.
Is that so?
Yes, sir. He'd be away a month.
A month? Oh.
Yes, sir. I thought as long as Teddy and I have our wedding license and everything, I ought to see if we could...
Hello, Elwood.
Oh, Teddy. Here, sit down. Gosh, you do look tired.
I am a little... I've been in surgery since 7:30 this morning.
I'm sorry to get here before you had a chance to rest, but something came up this afternoon. I had to make a hurry-up decision for us.
Oh? What was that? If you two will excuse us, Henry and I have several things we have to do. Come on, Henry.
Oh, now, here I am running out of your own library with that nice fire and all.
Henry?
Yes, Henry. Please excuse me. What time are we having dinner, Henry?
About a half an hour. We're expecting you now, Elwood.
Well, thank you very much. Well... Certainly nice of him to ask me. I'm just going to pop in now.
Elwood, what decision did you have to make?
Oh, well, about our wedding date, Teddy.
I beg your pardon?
I tried to call you at the hospital, but they said you were in surgery both times. So I went over to see Dr. MacArthur myself. I didn't think you'd mind.
You went over to see him yourself? Why?
Well, we got our marriage license, and... Well, here I go, starting in the middle again. Well, Dr. MacArthur's going to be away for a month, and I know it's important to the barbers to always have him for weddings and baptisms and things, so when I saw it in the paper, that he was leaving Sunday, well, I thought I'd better check and see if he had a lot of other engagements this week. Good thing I did, too. He's got two weddings and a funeral. The only afternoon he's got open is day after tomorrow. So I told him to hold it till I could talk to you.
You mean we're to be married day after tomorrow and you've made arrangements, Elsa?
Tentatively, yes. I didn't talk to Mr. and Mrs. Barber about it, but I'm sure it'll be all right with them. It's a nice day. We could be married in the garden. I know they want the wedding here. They said so.
I can't quite believe you've done this, Elwood.
Well, it isn't final, Teddy. But we don't want to wait another month, do we? See, now that we've got a house to live in, you're stationed here, I got a new practice to build up. Well, what's to stop us?
Elwood, why do you keep pushing me?
I'm not trying to push it, Teddy. I only thought
that... You don't think at all. You really don't. You just go helter-skelter, pell-mell into things.
Gee, don't get sore, Teddy. I don't want to wait another month. I didn't think you did. We got our license. Well, when you get your license, the next thing you do is get married.
I'm not going to get married day after tomorrow, Elwood. I just can't, that's all. I can't get ready. You'll have to call Dr. MacArthur and tell him it'll be sometime after he returns.
Okay, but... That's going to be kind of awkward for me. Oh, I don't mean telling him, that's all right. But I'll have to move into that house alone and get my practice started. I don't see why we couldn't move in together.
Well, we can't. Not now. Don't look at me that way. It isn't my fault, Elwood.
I know, Teddy. I'm sorry.
You're always sorry. You do these harebrained, precipitant things, and then you're always sorry. I wouldn't mind one mistake, but you keep making the same ones over and over. You never seem to learn.
You don't have to get sore, Teddy. I said this was a tentative arrangement with Dr. MacArthur.
Do you suppose Paul would make a mess of things the way you always do?
Now, don't bring Paul into it.
No, but just examine it, Elwood. Haven't you bothered to watch the way Paul does things?
Well, sure, he...
Doesn't it teach you anything?
Teddy, you're always throwing Paul up to me. They're different people. He's been around more, maybe, and he's a very smooth guy.
But you don't try to change.
I'm not going to try to imitate somebody else.
I'm asking you to use a little good common sense, Elwood. You don't have to imitate anybody. But Paul would never have bought a house for his bride without consulting her. There are more important things than bargains, Elwood.
Well, sure, I
know.
And
the last thing in the world Paul would ever do would be to come and tell his fiancée that he'd made all the arrangements for the wedding. Humbling and clumsy.
Well, there isn't any call for you to get sore at
you
me.
You hurry me and corner me and force me into things before I'm ready.
I, I'm not trying to force you, Teddy. Gosh, I don't understand you. I thought you wanted to get married. I've got a license in my pocket that you signed right along with me. Doesn't that mean anything?
Well, of course it does, but...
But what? It isn't just this time, Teddy. There's always something wrong with every plan I bring up. There's always an excuse or a reason for delay.
You hurry things so well.
All right, maybe I do, but... Gosh, if you loved me as much as I love you, it wouldn't matter. You'd be as eager to get married as I am, and you wouldn't feel you were being pushed. But, well, that's okay. I know what's really the matter now. Paul.
Don't you say a word again to Paul.
There isn't any such person.
What do you mean?
You put a guy on a pedestal with a halo around his head, and he doesn't really exist at all.
Don't you dare say things like that.
Look, I think Paul Barber is fine. I like him. But nobody can be the paragon you think Paul is. If I have to stand up beside him and be measured every time I do or say anything all the rest of my life, well, it won't work, Teddy. It just won't work. I'll grant you Paul's a man of the world, and I'm not. He's a flyer. That's very dashing. I'm a dentist, and that isn't. But he's your father, and I want to be your husband. I can't be both.
He's my father by adoption.
Does that make a difference? Oh, I see. I guess I am kind of dumb, all right. You're in love with him.
I love him, Elwood, and I'm grateful to him. Of course, I admire him with my whole heart. I always have, and I always will. And if you want to put the wrong interpretation on it, go ahead. Doesn't matter to me what you think.
That's pretty strong, Teddy. Just what do you mean by it?
I mean this whole thing was a mistake, Elwood, and it's time we both realized it.
I see. Well, not much left then for me to do. Except go.
But you're invited to dinner, Elwood.
Oh, sure. I stumbled into that the way I stumble into everything. Tell the barbers for me I'm sorry. Tell them I couldn't stay.
Elwood.
It'd be embarrassing, Teddy. It'd be those long silences at the table because you and I haven't anything to say to each other now. I won't bother you anymore. Good night.
Here's the family again.
Teddy, dinner's ready. Oh, Teddy, Elwood, dinner. Elwood's gone, Mother Barbara.
What in the world?
The whole thing's off, Mother Barbara.
One Man's Family, Untuned to Yesterday, from September 25th, 1950 on NBC. At the point of that broadcast, it had been on the air for about 18 years and was part of NBC's regular weeknight lineup at 7:45. About 7.5 million people would tune in each weeknight. This is an hour of continuing stories on Tuned to Yesterday. We now close the hour with yours truly, Johnny Dollar, with Episode 3 of the Chesapeake Fraud Matter, heard on CBS on October 19th, 1955.
From Hollywood, it's time now for Bob Bailey as...
Johnny Dollar.
Hugh Bryan, Mr. Dollar. How are you this morning?
Not so good. I didn't sleep very well. How'd you do?
I think I have about what you want on John Reardon.
Well, if you haven't, I can get it from Mrs. Reardon.
What? Well, I thought you didn't want to tell her about the report, that her husband might still be alive.
She knows. She overheard us talking last night.
Oh. Well, what do you want to do?
I might as well look at what you have and get this over with. How about an hour from now?
I'll be waiting for you.
Tonight and every weekday night, Bob Bailey in the transcribed adventures of the man with the action-packed expense account, America's fabulous freelance insurance investigator...
Yours truly, Johnny Dollar. Expense account submitted by Special Investigator Johnny Dollar to the Universal Adjustment Bureau, Baltimore, Maryland. The following is an accounting of expenditures during my investigation of the Chesapeake fraud matter. Expense account item 6, $1.50. One collect telegram from Denver, Colorado.
I've located Frank Bowers as per your request. Cursory investigation discloses little evidence that would lead me to believe he might be the John Ridden of Baltimore. Looks like a ham bone to me, Johnny. What do I do now? Signed, George Hanley, George Hanley Investigations Incorporated, Denver, Colorado.
Item 7, $2, same thing. Telegram from me.
Things are about the same way here. Sit tight. I'll see you in a day or two. Love, Johnny.
Once the telegrams were out of the way, I walked 3 blocks from my hotel to the office building of Hugh Bryan. It was an impressive place full of lawyers and doctors. Hugh Bryan looked a little haggard when I saw him.
It took me a while to get all this together. Half the night.
There wasn't that big a rush.
Oh, get it out of the way. The sooner you have what you need, the sooner you can make sure, and the sooner I won't worry about it anymore. Did you talk to Elizabeth yet today?
No, just last night.
Oh, I thought maybe she might have called you this morning. I'm so sorry for that girl.
Well, don't feel too bad, Mr. Bryan. We both did everything we could to keep the report that her husband might be alive from her. Awkward as it was.
Yes, I know. I still don't understand it, I guess.
Well, a man named Coombs, an insurance official, thinks he saw Reardon in Denver last week using the name Frank Bowers. He's sure that Bowers was Reardon. If he turns out to be Reardon, the insurance company's been taken for $20,000 they paid to Elizabeth Reardon, just to set you straight.
That'd make Elizabeth party to a fraud. And John. Lord knows that's silly.
Well, silly or not.
Yes. Well, here's what I have. Now, this is one of the last pictures taken of John Reardon.
Mm-hmm. Have the negatives?
Yes. Here. And these are some vital statistics on him. The physical part I got from his doctor.
Mm-hmm.
He stood an examination about a month before the accident.
This the doctor's name here?
Yes. Now, these other things are in his background and education. Here, a copy of his marriage license, birth certificate.
How did you get a hold of these things?
Well, I handled a lot of business for John, filed a lot of his papers for him. These were just packed away. It took a while to find them.
Hey.
Hmm?
A copy of his fingerprints?
Well, would those help?
More than any of this other stuff. Fingerprints aren't standard papers in anybody's file.
Before John went in the Army, he did some engineering work for the Proving Grounds in Aberdeen.
Oh.
He was fingerprinted there. It was a gag at the time. He had a set of his own blown up and put on the wall in a picture frame. You know, just a joke.
Yeah.
I dug them out of his personal things. Now then, here's a copy of his financial records, tax returns and whatnot.
I spent about an hour in Hugh Bryan's office going over material that would help me in the investigation. The pictures and fingerprints were the most helpful items. After I'd finished, I went back to my hotel, packed my bags, and checked out. Expense account, item 8. $398, my hotel and incidentals in Baltimore and plane fare to Denver. I got there at 9 in the morning. The air crisp, thin, and full of sunshine. I rented a car at the airport and drove into town. A half an hour later, I was talking to my detective friend, George Hanley.
How do you like Denver, old pal?
I haven't been here for a few years. It doesn't look the same.
Bigger and better, huh? They're thinking of putting up buildings as big as those mountains over there. I love it. So's the wife.
I'm glad.
You ought to try a place like this for a while, Johnny.
Maybe I will.
Ought to find yourself a girl and settle down.
Let's us settle down, Georgie.
Huh? Oh, sure.
How'd it go?
You asked me to look into Frank Bowers. I looked into him as much as I could without talking to him. There you are, Johnny. His bank account, his friends, his troubles, his enemies, everything.
Mm-hmm. How about his police record?
One traffic violation 2 years ago. Never been in any kind of trouble around here. Gets along fine with everybody.
Well, tell me about everybody, Georgie.
His laundryman, the milkman, the guy who tends bar in his neighborhood, the man he buys gas from. I talked to all of them.
How about the people he works with?
Well, he don't do much of that as far as I can see. He's got an office downtown, calls himself a consulting engineer. Goes there once or twice a week to pick up his mail.
Well, now, that's a very nice way to be able to live. Is he starving to death, Georgie?
No, he's got a good bank account. Makes regular deposits. Money comes from a New York bonding firm. He owns a little two-bedroom house out beyond Park Hill. Paid $38,000 for it.
Well...
Sleeps in one bedroom, uses the other one for a kind of studio, putters around with clay, oils, and according to the nosy dame who lives across the street, he tries to write.
How about his friends?
Lots of them. Pays his bills, gets drunk now and then, normal.
Tell me about his wife.
He hasn't got one. Lives alone.
Find out who he goes with, Georgie.
No. As much as I could find out, he doesn't go with anybody.
Enemies?
Well, the guy in the cleaning shop hates his guts. Bowers doesn't like his shirts with starch.
Did you check out the residency business?
As far as I could. He bought that house out in Park Hill in 1951. Paid cash for it. Record of the sale gives his former residence is Toledo, Ohio.
Well, how long has he been a resident here?
As near as I can figure, and this is just rough, 4 or 5 years ago, the first financial transaction was the house he bought. The next was a car. He could have been here a long time before that, though.
Well, the time element would fit for Reardon. What do you think, Georgie?
I think you're probably wasting a lot of money investigating this guy. He doesn't seem like the kind of man who's hiding out from anybody.
Here, look at this photo. Is this Frank Bowers?
Yeah, I'd say so.
5'11", 170, olive complexion, no scars, no glasses, brown hair, about 35.
Could be him from that, yes.
This is a picture of John Reardon, and the description is Reardon's.
What do you want to do now?
Keep on it. I got George Hanley busy making a check with some people in Toledo who could find out whether or not a Frank Bauer had once lived there. Then I took my rented car and drove out to the address Hanley had given me. It was in the east side of the city near the airport, a one-story frame house, a 53 Merc in the driveway. I'm looking for Mr. Frank Bowers.
Oh, who are you?
Johnny Dollar.
Oh, I'm Frank Bauer.
Well, I'm an insurance investigator, Mr. Bowers. I'd like to talk to you.
Oh, come on in.
Thank you.
Take a chair anywhere, huh? What's on your mind?
Just making a routine check, Mr. Bowers. Thought perhaps you could help me.
Well, I don't know anything about my neighbors, if that's that kind of thing.
No, I'm running down a report that came across our office in Baltimore.
Baltimore?
Ever been there, Mr. Bowers?
No.
Swell place on Chesapeake Bay.
Well, I like Denver. What's this all about?
Well, do you happen to remember a few days ago when you were at a place called the Ship's Tavern?
Well, that's in the Brown Palace.
This was last Friday, to be exact.
Should I remember? What I do, steal an ashtray or walk out on a check?
Well, a man from Baltimore was there that day, Mr. Bowers. His name was Coombs. Paul Coombs. You met him.
Well, did I?
Yes, right at the bar. You had a drink or two with him.
Well, I might have. I don't know whether to admit it or not. What are you getting at? I don't understand this.
I know it seems confusing. Maybe this will help. Take a look at this.
Mm-hmm.
Now, you must admit, you look a great deal like the man in that picture.
Yeah. Yeah, I suppose I do. Well, I'll be darned. Hey, I'd do it that. You know, this could be a picture of me.
That's why I'm here, Mr. Bowers. You see, the company I represent insured the man in this picture for quite an amount of money. His name was John Reardon. He was lost in a boat accident in Chesapeake Bay 5 years ago. The Mr. Coombs who met you at the bar here last week thought you were John Reardon.
I don't blame him. But I'm not. Close, though. Now, want to smoke?
Oh, thanks. Thanks.
Sure.
Mr. Coombs was a lifelong friend of John Reardon's. I have his sworn statement here about that meeting with you and the certainty of his identity.
You do?
Yes, right here. Would you like to see it?
Well, not particularly.
I understand you went to Ohio State. What year did you graduate?
I didn't go to Ohio State. Look, what is this, huh?
Well, that's what you told Mr. Coombs. It's in the statement.
Oh, I remember that bird now. Oh, I might have told him anything, Mr. Dollar. You know, he's one of those inquisitive kind, real sure of himself. Yeah, I remember. Look, don't tell me they sent you all the way out here from Baltimore.
They did.
And that guy say so?
Mm-hmm.
Well, that's funny.
Did you go to college, Mr. Bowers?
What?
I'd like to clear up that detail. Did you go to college?
Well, yes. I went to Carnegie Tech, 36 through 40.
You haven't lived all your life in Colorado, then. Where else have you lived?
Look, do you have any right to ask me questions like this?
No, but you'll help me a lot if you'll answer them.
Well, why not? Okay, I've lived in New York, Pittsburgh, Kansas City, Toledo, around the country. Came here a few years ago with my health. Seemed good to my asthma.
Ever been married?
Once in 1942. It didn't last long. Oh, what else you want to know?
Well, look, you in a hurry? I can come back later.
No, it's not that. It's, well, look, you seem like a nice guy, Dollar, but it just makes me uncomfortable answering these questions of yours.
I appreciate the time you've given me already, Mr. Bauer. Please understand, it's a matter of establishing identity.
But you know who I am. I just told you.
That's true.
I don't like this business much. Is there any way you can eliminate it?
The most positive identification would be from fingerprints.
Oh?
Now, Mr. Bauer, I'm not so much interested in who you are as in proving that you're not John Reardon. If you volunteered a set of fingerprints, it'd save me a great deal of work and you a great deal of trouble.
Well, sure, why not?
Mm-hmm. drove downtown together to George Hanley's office and used the portable fingerprint kit. I took a complete set of Frank Bauer's prints he attached. I thanked him for his time and trouble, and he left. If he was trying to cover something, it certainly wasn't apparent from his conversational reactions. There had been a moment when I was sure he wasn't Frank Bauer. On the other hand, I was sure that he wasn't John Reardon.
That cuts it, Johnny. Right thumb and index prints don't match at all.
Oh, not even close, George.
And I thought I was getting somewhere. I found out he was never in Toledo, or at least never registered or licensed as an engineer. Well, these prints do it. When are you going home, Johnny?
Oh, I don't know.
There's no reason to stick around any longer.
This is crazy.
You proved your case with the prints.
He was too anxious to help me prove it, Georgie. You ask any ordinary man on the street two personal questions about himself, and he'll tell you to go jump in the lake. You ask him for his fingerprints, and he's liable to smash you.
So?
Get on him. Stay with him 24 hours a day. Get a couple of other men.
It'll cost you money.
Get busy. Expense account item 9, $200, detective service. I didn't believe Frank Bowers. I didn't believe his background. And most of all, I didn't believe his fingerprints.
There'll be another exciting episode in our story of the Chesapeake fraud matter tomorrow.
Tomorrow, another man comes to Denver. He doesn't check in a hotel or carry luggage. At least not much luggage. Just a .38 Colt. Join us, won't you? Yours truly, Johnny Dollar.
Yours truly, Johnny Dollar, starring Bob Bailey, is transcribed in Hollywood. Written by John Dawson, it is produced and directed by Jack Johnstone. Be sure to join us tomorrow night, same time and station, for the next exciting episode of Yours Truly, Johnny Dollar. Roy Rowan speaking.
Yours Truly, Johnny Dollar, on Tuned to Yesterday from the 19th of October, 1955 on CBS. And that does it for this hour of continuing stories on Tuned to Yesterday. Be sure to be with us next week at the same time as we continue these tales from radio's past. Until our next hour together, I'm Mark Levonier. It's been a pleasure.